The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels. Welcome to Healing with Dr. Daniels. And I'd like to remind our listeners that they can call us in at 914-338-0695. And I'd also like to recap the theme of this radio show, which is the competent practice of medicine, according to the standard of care, is the leading cause of death in America. Healing with Dr. Daniels is a place where you can get honest answers that can save your life. This is a place to get healing news you can use without all the technical mumbo-jumbo. You're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And to call in, it's 914-338-0695. Well, with that, we'll go ahead and get started. Today's topic is health insurance. Is it killing you? Is it making you sick and robbing you of your wealth? So I'd like to share with you what led me to pick this title. Seems like an unusual title. But actually, it turns out that there are 45 million uninsured people in the United States. And of those 45 million uninsured people, there are 45,000 deaths every year because they did not have access to medical care. Now, there's another group of people in the United States. They have insurance. And there are, obviously, 266 million of those. But 2.4 million of those die every year. That's 1 in 107. So that's a death rate of 9 times that of people who die because they don't have health care. In other words, having health insurance literally is 10 times more deadly than being uninsured. This is absolutely, absolutely shocking. Now, to give you a kind of a gist of how this happened, it's important to understand what health insurance is, how it started, and what the purpose of health insurance is. So health insurance started back in 1929, Baylor Hospital in Texas. And this was a depression. And Baylor Hospital was having financial difficulties. And they were actually getting ready to close. It was just that bad. And so they took a look to see who was it that owed them all this money. And much to their shock and amazement, their hard times had nothing whatever to do with the economy. They were going out of business because their very own employees were using the hospital and not paying their hospital bills. Well, history has not put down the name of the individual, but health care and health insurance owes him a lot. They should build a statue to this guy. So what did he figure out? He figured out that it would be a great idea if the employees would voluntarily decide to give a portion of their wages every paycheck to the hospital. And in return, the hospital will permit them to receive care at the hospital. And the idea of prepayment was born. And employees agreed to have an amount deducted from each paycheck and in exchange have hospital care when they were sick. So I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. Also, if you'd like to call in, number is 914-338-0695. Now, the question is, did this protect patients from financial ruin? Well, the problem health insurance was designed to solve was the hospital's financial problem. It was not designed to solve the patient's financial problem for access to health care. It was never designed to do that. In fact, patients had no problem with access to health care. They could just go to the very hospital they worked at. They had no problem with financial difficulty because if they didn't want to pay their bill, why, they just didn't pay their bill. And if they wanted to pay it, why, they just paid it. So before health insurance, patients had absolutely no problem with access, at least none that insurance helped, and they had no problem with financial ruin due to health bills. So health insurance actually was not designed to protect the patient from financial ruin or to increase the accessibility of health care, right? Because the health insurance was provided to the employees who already had access to health care, and all it did was make sure that the health care was paid for and the hospital received revenue. So what other problems did health insurance solve? Well, as time moved along, World War II came along. And in the 40s, the War Labor Board ruled that wage and price controls did not apply to fringe benefits like health insurance. And this led many employers to institute employer health insurance, employer-sponsored benefits. And what this has evolved to today is by providing health insurance, companies can literally tie workers to them without paying them more money. I mean, how many times have you heard someone say, I hate this job, I'm just keeping it for the insurance benefits. So health insurance has become the shackle that holds an otherwise dissatisfied, underpaid worker and keeps them showing up for work every day. It keeps the 1% ruling the 99%. So I'd like to take a pause here to remind you that you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And call in. We'd love to answer your questions at 914-338-0695. Now, this is pretty amazing. So where's the government in all this? Well, that brings up the next problem that health insurance solved. Politicians have a huge issue of how to get people to happily volunteer to pay more taxes. And it turned out that health insurance really filled this bill. Politicians could actually get citizens to willingly accept tax increases by yelling, health insurance, health insurance. We call this playing the insurance card. And we see this with Medicare, which happened in the 60s. Medicaid happened at the same time in the 60s. People will happily accepted a mandatory fixed tax in the case of Medicare on pretty much all of their earnings today for the promise that they would have health care when they became 65. And that was so well received, or at the time they were so excited, they figured, what the heck, why don't we include Medicaid? Well, Medicaid is a matching program, so that means each state has to institute a corresponding mandatory tax. So now we have a state tax. And this got so good that I know in Syracuse, New York, or Onondaga County, we even have a property tax levied, a county tax for health care. And they decided, what the heck, we'll raise the sales tax for health care. And now, most recently, we have an Obama tax, or I should say mandatory premiums for health insurance. And so this latest plan is very interesting because the uninsured population is 45 million people. Despite the vastness of the National Health Insurance Program that is passed in the United States, it's only going to affect 10 million of the 45 million uninsured. This means that there's 35 million people who remained uninsured, and it solves less than 25% of the problem that motivated its creation, and this means there will be an opportunity to use it again in the future for yet another tax. So the average person in the United States earning $100,000 per year is actually paying 25% of their gross income for numerous health taxes as well as health insurance premiums. So this is not insurance. It's legalized extortion. So how does insurance relate to death by medicine? Well, it's only through insurance that the sale of pharmaceuticals can be maximized. So drug companies could now write protocols that include lethal doses, lethal duration, and lethal conditions. Using a non-lethal dose would require using half a dose in half as many people for half the duration. So non-lethal sales would be about one-eighth of the revenue as selling and marketing the drug in a manner that would lead or result in no death. So if you marketed a medication so that no death would incur, then the sales would be one-eighth of what it would be if you sold it and marketed it in a manner that would result in many deaths. So it allows the doctor or hospital following the deadly protocol called the standard of care to get paid when the patient dies or when the patient is maimed. So the patient is out of control. The patient can't say, hey, you harmed me. I'm mad at you. I'm not going to pay you. Why? It's already paid. So this allows, this solves the problem for pharmaceutical companies in terms of marketing of their drugs. So now they can market their drugs for as long as they want, as high a dose as they want, and still get paid. So you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And please call in at 914-338-0695. Love to hear your questions. Now, one question you might wonder about is, don't insurance companies lose money when health costs rise like this? Well, that's true. Insurance companies were in a pickle because they could not slash health care costs or they would be irrelevant. In other words, they couldn't accomplish their mission of making sure hospitals got paid. So they invented ways to get paid that garner more revenue if health care costs rise. So insurance companies are now paid as claims processors and receive a percent of the amount in claims paid. In other words, the more money is spent on health care, the more money they make. They also get bonuses when certain health targets are reached. So they solved that problem. Now, they also had another problem, and that problem was that as any insurance company, there's always something called a moral hazard. A moral hazard is when the customer paying the premiums actually experiences personal benefit from using the service such that it can endanger the financial viability of the insurance company. So insurance company needs predictability of expenses so they can project what they need to charge for the insurance, and they can't have the unpredictability of a patient saying, hey, I think I want to go see a doctor today. I like that doctor so much. I'm going to make another appointment. That cannot be tolerated. So in order to create this predictability, the insurance companies have protocols that doctors follow. This creates a predictable use pattern. And the other thing that happens is the insurance companies create rules which make the doctor-patient encounter as unpleasant as possible and wants the patient to drives the patient to minimize this. Also, it makes the patient hospital encounter as deadly as possible, so people who tend to use the hospital will die in greater numbers. They'll be removed from the insurance rolls, and you have a cadre of customers predictably not using their insurance or not accessing their health insurance. And so this is what has evolved over a period of several decades. In fact, when I was practicing medicine, I had a practice where it's our policy to see every patient on time. So the patient got there 5 minutes early. Guess what? We saw them 5 minutes early. There was not another appointment at the time. And our scheduling was so on time that patients could literally make an appointment over lunch, come to the office, be seen, and get back to work and not need to take a sick day. I thought that was a pretty good system. Well, then we accepted an insurance, which I won't name. And so insurance said, well, you know, we're taking on this new company, and, you know, we have to be really careful about eligibility. And so we want you to call our office whenever a patient makes an appointment so we can confirm or verify their eligibility. And you are not to see any patient until their eligibility has been confirmed. Well, it sounded reasonable to us, and we're happy to cooperate. So we have a patient who has, say, a Tuesday 2 p.m. appointment. So the front desk person, receptionist, who was also my mother, would call the insurance company the day before and say, hey, this is patient eligible. Oh, you have to call back on the day of the appointment. Oh, okay. So we call back at 9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, we have to check our records. We don't know. And so we're calling. And finally, it's 1:30. I said, oh, we can't tell you. Finally, 4 p.m., they still don't know if the patient's eligible. So the patient, of course, comes to the office at 2 o'clock. And finally, we caught on to what they were doing. They were trying to make the patient wait a long period of time, create a contentious, difficult atmosphere in our office so patients wouldn't want to come. So what we did then was the patient would come for the appointment. We would call them. They would say they didn't know if the patient was eligible, and we would hand the phone to the patient, who would then vent all of their spleen, all of their anger towards the insurance company executive. So the insurance company had done is they create a split staff. Doctors called one number and got one set of answers. Patients called another number and got another set of answers. And so what we realized was the company was attempting to create an unpleasant environment for the patient, for the doctors, so that patients would not want to use their benefits. And so it turns out that the present system is actually perfect for insurance companies. Now, many people have insurance. Insurance does not pay the whole thing. Insurance pays anywhere from 80 to 85% of healthcare costs. Some insurances pay the whole bit, or for certain diagnoses, let's say pregnancy, they might. But in general, they pay 80 to 85% of healthcare costs. So how does this help the patients? Well, it turns out that this is not as helpful as you might imagine. It turns out if we access the statistic, which was first determined in 1985 by the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment, only 15% of medical interventions are proven to be effective. This means that 85% of medical care is medically unnecessary because the procedure or medication is simply not beneficial, even though it is part of the standard of care. So the remaining 15% of the standard of care, while it may be proven effective, is often applied in circumstances where it's not beneficial. In other words, they are administered to patients who do not need them as well as patients who do. An example of this is cesarean sections in the United States. Cesarean sections are beneficial. However, in the United States, the cesarean section rate is 35%, while infant mortality averages 6.3 per 1,000. The Netherlands has an infant mortality rate of 3.7 per 1,000 and a cesarean section rate of 13.5%. If we just use this example, then we can see that 61.4% of the C-sections in the United States could be eliminated while achieving superior health outcomes for babies and their mothers. Using this as an example, we can estimate that 61.4% of the 15% of medical interventions that are effective are likely not contributing to better health outcomes, while only 38.6% may actually be of benefit. Now, this is a lot of math here, so bear with me, and you're just going to have to trust my calculator. So if we take 38.6%, which is what we believe to be beneficial, times the 15%, which is the amount of procedures that are proven to be effective, we get 5.2%. In other words, 5.2% of all healthcare expenditures are likely contributing to the improved health of the patient receiving them. These figures are admittedly rough estimates, and no research has been done in these areas. So this is an area that's ripe for research. However, until we have the data, it's important to use the information that is available. So if all non-beneficial or harmful care were eliminated, healthcare costs would be 5.2% of present-day levels. This is without any price reductions, without any price controls. This is less than most copays and deductibles. The insurance companies would be irrelevant if all harmful, unnecessary, and irrelevant care was eliminated. Why would anyone pay $1,000 plus per month in insurance premiums and pay 20% copay and deductible when they could just pay 5.2% and have no insurance premiums? So insurance companies have absolutely no interest whatever in identifying and eliminating the 85% of care that is not beneficial, or indeed that is contributing to the 797,000 deaths every year through medical care. Now, you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/findout to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And to call in, if you have any questions, it's 914-338-0695. So this is a lot of stuff we're covering today. I hope you guys are enjoying it, because this is information really you can't find most any other place. Now, one question is, how does this affect safety? So how does having health insurance affect safety? Well, it turns out that this is another dirty little secret. Health insurance actually makes it possible for you, for patients, to receive the 85% of medical care that has proven to be ineffective or harmful, and to have effective therapy in situations where it is not needed. So if all you had to spend was the cash in your pockets or your bank account, you would experience the 1 in 1,000 annual death rate of the uninsured instead of the 1 in 107 death rate experienced by the insured. If we use the ratio of 0.107 of deadly care, which is basically about, and use it as a marker for care in general, we can extrapolate and see that if present health consumption were reduced by 89.3%, that's basically 10.7% minus 100%. And so the 10.7% is what's deadly. So 89.3% of the insured population, they would be a lot better off. This number is reasonable as it contains the 85% of care that's proven to be of no benefit and the 4.3% of the 15% of beneficial care that's applied even in cases where it's of no benefit. So obviously, if present health costs were reduced by anywhere from 89% to 94.8%, who would need health insurance? This is why the insurance companies cannot and will not even attempt to identify and eliminate the 85% of care that is of no benefit. They have all the data they need. I know they do. How do I know they have this data? Because I gave it to them, and so did your doctor. Insurance companies routinely ask for and receive a copy of the patient chart before paying any medical bill. And now that medical records are electronic, this process is quicker and more efficient. So there's a conscious decision to pay for care that is of no benefit, and a conscious decision to pay for care that is deadly. Insurance companies even coerce subscribers into getting things like annual exams that are proven to be of no health benefit and merely drive up healthcare costs and drive up healthcare risk by creating a lot of false positive test results that require even more tests and needless surgeries to investigate. They market preventive therapies like cholesterol therapies that are proven to take 1,250 years of use to benefit one user. One reason for this is that if patients stopped consuming harmful and ineffective medical therapies, there would be no need for health insurance, since the cost could be covered with less than the price of a household appliance. Well, you know, one question people have is, I'll say, well, Dr. Daniels, my doctor's a pretty cool guy. Can I just ask him to skip the 85% of medicine that has proven to be dangerous and ineffective? You know, and I'm glad that people have actually asked me this question. The 85% of medical care that is ineffective or harmful is actually part of the standard of care. Your doctor is obligated to provide care according to these rules. If he does not provide the standard of care, in other words, if he does not provide the 85% of medical care that is ineffective and harmful, it is insurance fraud for him to bill your insurance for the care. It is malpractice in a court of law and can cause him to lose his medical license because he is certified to practice medicine according to the standard of care. That's what his license permits. So if he is licensed, and he is not free to refuse to provide the 85% of medical care that is ineffective or dangerous. You know, another thing people worry about is, well, say, well, Dr. Daniels, what if something really, really serious happens? Doesn't health insurance protect people from financial ruin? Well, it turns out a closer look reveals some pretty interesting stuff here. People feared going bankrupt as a result of health care costs. So they purchased health insurance to avoid bankruptcy due to health care costs. Because back in 2007, the alarming statistic says 60% of all bankruptcies were due to medical bills. So having health insurance made people feel much more secure in their finances. However, this feeling was based more on emotion than fact. It turns out that of the people who experienced bankruptcies due to health expenses, 75% have health insurance. Like, whoa, wait a minute, 85% of the general population has health insurance, so health insurance holders are only experiencing 11% reduction in their number of bankruptcies due to health bills. Put another way, their risk of experiencing bankruptcy from health care bills is 89% of what it would be if they did not have health insurance. So would you use a contraceptive that was 11% effective? Why buy health insurance to solve a problem it addresses in only 11% of cases? Another victory for the insurance guys. Now, you're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And call in at 914-338-0695. Now, medical harm and financial harm is so frequent. Is there a pattern to this? Is it like hustling the mark? Is there a certain sequence of events that happens again and again and again and again? Well, it turns out, yes, there is. So let's see how the hustle works. First, you experience a medical encounter. You show your insurance card, slap it right there on this counter. The hospital tells you that they accept your insurance. You are relieved. You are asked to sign the registration form. You sign it. You receive everything according to the standard of care. You are discharged and return home. Then the nightmare begins. That little registration form you signed said that you would pay any charges not paid for by your insurance company with any and all of your assets. Your insurance company then informs you that the records you got from the hospital did not justify the charges. You are now on the hook for $9,447 in charges. This is the cost of an average hospital stay in the United States. As of actually 2007, this is 2012, it's much higher, I'm sure, but the latest data is for 2007. This is the average cost of a hospitalization. You're relieved to find that nothing was wrong, but you've also been relieved of your assets. Now, another scenario, similar, this time you go to the hospital, slap down your card, sign the registration form, not realizing you've committed all your assets, but you sign this form, and you get a hospital-acquired infection, and you die while in the hospital. Now, the average cost as of 2007 for hospitalization in which the patient dies of a hospital infection, if he was in Nevada, is $113,000. Now, the insurance company determines that only part of the stay will be paid for. Because of the registration form that you sign when you check into the hospital, your heirs are second in line behind the hospital for your assets. If you're the average American, there will not be enough money left to bury you. Now, if you're lucky, your insurance company will pay the bill or strong-arm the hospital into forgetting about it. Of course, the worst news is, right, you're still dead. But even worse is that hospital accounting is watching. What hospital would take a $9,447 payday, the average pay if the patient is discharged alive, if it could have a $26,035 payday, the average revenue for a hospital stay when the patient dies, or if you're in Nevada, $113,000 payday? You got it. There is no incentive whatever for the hospital to discharge you alive. In fact, the financial incentive is exactly in the opposite direction. And we can see this operating because every year, hospital-acquired infections are going up. And every year, the hospital says, oh, we're taking infectious control precautions. We're doing this. Oh, we're looking into it. Oh, my God, I wish we could have to do something about it. But nothing ever happens. I won't say nothing happens. It gets worse and worse and worse. More people die every year. Hospital revenues climb from this, of course, unfortunate diagnosis. So basically, each patient arrives at the hospital with a blank check on their chest that says, murder me, sign here, get paid. Just in case you have any doubt, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, that's AHRQ, has looked into this on your behalf. Uninsured patients make up 3% of hospital deaths. Whoa, but they make up 15% of the U.S. population and only 3% of hospital deaths. So literally, if you're uninsured, your chances of dying in a hospital are one-fifth of what they would be if you were insured. So literally having insurance appears to be a multiplier, multiplying the deadliness, multiplying the lethality of the hospital encounter. Another question you might ask, well, what if the patient has a complication or doesn't like the care he got? Well, the health insurance is designed to make sure the hospital gets paid and makes as much money as possible. It also gets many people who would not have gone to the hospital to go to the hospital because they think they can afford it when, of course, they can't, because, of course, the insurance after the fact can deny coverage. And so if you have a complication, if you don't like the care you got, the hospital gets paid it anyway. It does not in any way affect the amount of money the hospital gets paid. And so because this concept of being covered encourages people to use a hospital when they otherwise would not, one can guess that literally 10 times as many people are going to the hospital just because they believe that they're covered. And they have varying degrees of success in getting their insurance companies to pay. And if the hospital is able to even get paid for 7 out of 10 of these people, it's a success. And if a few of them die, it's a smashing hit. So hospital revenues are up, insurance company revenues are up, your pockets are empty, and everyone is happy. This is really the same as the bait and switch at the department stores. If you have health insurance, you are at greater risk of going bankrupt due to health costs. This is because you unknowingly accept financial obligations, believing they will be paid by the insurance company. So your risk of being bankrupt is not really diminished substantially by insurance because of this little glitch. And at the same time, you have five times the risk of dying while in the hospital as someone who has no insurance. So proportionally, your risk of dying in the hospital will be reduced fivefold if you entered the hospital without insurance. This is because the hospital gets paid 3 to 5 times as much for discharges when the patient dies. If you have insurance, there's an incentive to provide care to the point of death. Well, if you don't have insurance, doctor will say, you know what, I would use this high-powered XYZ drug, but in your case, you don't have insurance. It would be $1,000 a day. And the patient will say, you know, doctor, you're right. Let's skip that drug. And, of course, that drug would have been the deadly bullet. And so dying as a result of hospitalization or medical care is actually, it's a numbers game. They've actually determined, the same committee that determined the percent of uninsured who die as a result of hospitalization or while in the hospital, has determined that the average length of stay for a hospital admission resulting in death is about 8 days. Whereas the average length of stay for a hospital admission where the person is discharged alive is about 4 days. So there's a hot tip right there. I have to have a disclaimer. This is not medical advice. This is not determined to diagnose, treat, or improve any disease or illness. And obviously, you should always talk to your doctor before contemplating anything like whether or not to carry health insurance. So I'd like to pause here for station identification. You're listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. Please visit vitalitycouncils.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And call in at 914-338-0695. Love to hear from you. So right about now, you're probably thinking, whoa, what can people do to avoid this? Well, obviously, had you known in advance that having health insurance and signing a registration form would lead to financial ruin, you could have a plan. First, you might have stayed home. Second, you might have insisted on getting a cost estimate with every test and procedure, and you might have signed out AMA when your cost limit was reached. I think we have a question. Let's just see if we can take a question right here. You know, I'm having technical difficulties here. Well, I'm having difficulty. I can't seem to take that question. So what happens then is you have a plan. First, you might have stayed home. Maybe that's not an option. Second, you might have insisted on getting a cost estimate with every test and procedure and sign out against medical advice either when your cost limit was reached or on day four. So day four, like, oh, time out. You've had 4 days. You've done the best you can. I understand. I'm out of here. I'm going home. Now, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But that might be a reasonable thing. I'm going to tell you the story about a phone call I got actually over the weekend. A call from a relative of mine. He had a friend. She's in the hospital. She'd been there for 4 days. She wasn't feeling well. Things weren't going well at all. So she came to the hospital because she was having vomiting and diarrhea and abdominal pain. She believed that she ate something that wasn't quite right. Well, she got to the hospital, and didn't they give her morphine, which makes abdominal pain worse? And didn't they give her azithromycin, an antibiotic that makes abdominal pain and vomiting worse? And, of course, they gave her some high-tech anti-vomiting medicine, which, of course, was not effective, considering she had a vomiting condition, and they gave her two medicines that caused vomiting. So she's now coming up on day four, and I get a phone call. So, obviously, this person was literally on her way to some serious medical harm. And this is an example of what can happen, what often does happen. Now, this person's going to eventually get discharged from the hospital, and they're going to say, well, you know, we couldn't find anything. We did a CT scan, didn't show anything. Kept doing tests. None of the tests showed anything. So I'm hoping she made out pretty well. Now, or you might do what any uninsured person would have done, stayed home, taken your chances, and enjoyed the 90% reduction in mortality and 100% savings. This is every insurance company's nightmare. Why would an insurance company dislike this? Well, it's their job to make sure that hospitals get paid. And hospitals also are a major source of tax revenue for governments at every level, as their employees are all W-2 or 1099, and the income is fully taxable and documented. Now, the other reason insurance companies don't like this is because people stop using their insurance. After a while, they're going to say, you know what? I don't think I need this insurance. I'm going to drop it. So insurance companies don't like people taking independent action where their health is concerned. So are there any more surprises with the insurance companies? Yeah, there are. You know, another dirty little secret is the insurance companies actually pick and choose whose bills they pay. In my medical practice, when two patients have the exact same insurance, were paying the exact same premiums, if one was a common worker and the other was a business owner or administrator, this did not work for small businesses with fewer than 5 employees. But if the person was a common worker or a business owner or administrator of a large business, The bill for the common worker often did not get paid, and the bill for the owner or executive always got paid. We were stunned to see that two patients paying the same premiums got such different treatment in the way their bills were handled by the insurance companies. We were shocked. I mean, as doctors, what could we do? We couldn't do anything. It was a stunning thing to see that having health insurance is not that big a financial shield or protection as it is believed to be. Now, I'm sorry I can't take questions because I'm pushing all these buttons here and none of them are doing anything. But I'd like to go through some examples of what people have experienced in terms of encounters with insurance and how actually having insurance resulted in a far greater expense than not being insured. So one example is a college student. This is my daughter. She was a graduate student, and she injured her knee playing basketball, just a regular basketball game with a bunch of friends. And so her friends said, oh, Lily, get it checked out. You have insurance. Don't worry. And so I drove her to the emergency room in their car. Someone did. And the emergency room, the doctor saw her, examined her, ordered an MRI, $2,000 exam. For x-ray, and the insurance paid for the emergency room visit, the doctor's fee, but did not pay for $2,000 MRI because they decided that, well, it wasn't medically necessary. So what happened? 3 years later, they have sent my poor daughter numerous bills. And finally they decide they're going to offer to reduce it to $700, and she'll pay $700, and they'll just forget about it. Meanwhile, all she had was a sprain. It's a sprained knee. No surgery needed, nothing. But had she not had insurance, she would have sat at home, nursed this thing along, and it would have been just fine. Another example. This is interesting. This is a person who had insurance, but decided it would be too much trouble to use their insurance. Let's see what happened. So this person was riding a motorcycle. Pulled into a gas station, decided he would gas up the motorcycle, a reasonable thing to do. And as he was putting the pump back on the hook, a van slammed into him, knocking him over, knocking his motorcycle on top of him, and speeding off, basically a hit and run. And so he got back up on his motorcycle and kept driving. And it wasn't until 8 hours later that he realized his knee had tripled in size and he could not get off his motorcycle. Fortunately, he had coasted into the parking lot of a very nice hotel. And seeing his situation, they rolled out a wheelchair. He got in the wheelchair, checked into the hotel, and he contemplated his next move. It was over a weekend, so he didn't want to go to the emergency room and have a big, huge wait. He figured, well, he'd wait till Monday. Meanwhile, he thought a little more about it, and he said, you know what? I don't think that's broken. So for $200, he purchased purchased a pair of crutches, a knee brace at the local Walgreens, called his travel agent, changed his flights, and for a grand total of $200, got back home, where he sat down, alternated hot and cold, and is feeling very nicely on his crutches. And so by not accessing insurance, this person literally saved $200. Had he decided to go to an emergency room on Monday, he would have had the $100 doctor visit, the $100 ER visit, and, of course, the $2,000 to $2,500 x-ray. And, of course, well, maybe he would have had an ambulance visit by then, $800. Total of $3,500. So literally, the actual bill was 5.7%. of total charges. If he had insurance of any kind, even accident insurance, he might have had a higher deductible than that. So these are two examples, and these happen every single day, day in, day out. As a doctor who used to work in the emergency room, I can tell you that at least at least 60% of the people in the emergency room, and you probably can get bigger numbers than that, would have done very nicely had they never come. And many of them came to get it checked out, just to see, because they had insurance. And we encouraged this. And as an emergency room doctor, way back when in the old days, you know, they paid me $100 an hour, I actually had no objection. I mean, I'd see a hangnail if that person walked in. I had no objection to it. What I am saying is, in terms of the individual human being, their quality of life, in terms of not wasting all that time sitting and waiting in the emergency room, the anxiety, the stress, having to confront the standard of care, not knowing when the lethal dose is coming, having to be on guard to say no when they were getting into the lethal area, but saying yes to care that might be receptive, that's pretty stressful, especially when you're in pain and when you're suffering. So that is one thing to, you know, that's an important thing to look at. Now, another, we have like 13 minutes left, so I'm just going to, these are just odds and ends of information here. Many people think when they buy health insurance that they're just signing up for insurance. Like, you know, you buy house insurance or maybe you buy car insurance. Health insurance is a different animal. As soon as you buy health insurance, you become a covered life. You are no longer a human being. You no longer have free will. You have covered life. And you've literally given your health insurance company a limited power of attorney to make decisions of health care on your behalf. And the way they make these decisions is by giving doctors protocols that they have to follow if they expect the insurance company to compensate or pay them for the visit. And so literally, the person making medical decisions for you is not even in the room. And when I was practicing medicine, insurance companies would ask me to sign an agreement to follow protocols and to hide or conceal from the patient that I had signed such an agreement. I said, oh, boy, no, I'm not signing that. So I didn't participate with those insurance companies. And when their patients would call my office and say, why don't you take my insurance? I would show them the insurance company agreement. Because since I hadn't signed it, I wasn't bound by the obligation to keep it secret. But this is what happens when you sign up for health insurance. You literally become a covered life. The insurance company can literally commit your life as collateral for a loan, for financing, for merger deals, for buyouts. And it's a very uncomfortable place to be. And they get to make decisions about your health for their profit. And that's actually shocking. You know, I'm considering a real estate deal. And so my lawyer sent me a piece of paper granting him a limited power of attorney. Well, he only gets limited power of attorney for that one transaction. And if he wants to make any more decisions on my behalf, he's got to give me more pieces of paper to sign. He has to get permission for the limited power of attorney each and every step of the way. Not with your insurance company. Once you sign up for insurance, that's it. They have blanket limited power of attorney to exercise on your behalf for their benefit, and that's what happens. Now, a lot of people are concerned about healthcare costs. How come they're so high? Well, they are so high because they can be that way, and it's like supply and demand. It's because they can get the money. Now, a lot of research has been done on reducing healthcare costs, and back in 2004, I got this magazine, Alumni Magazine, Healthcare Management. The front page story, well, first of all, it's about the ineffectiveness of medical care. This is something that's talked about in many, many circles. A lot of organizations are concerned about this because a lot of money is on the line. It's a $2 trillion industry, and if nothing's working, what are you going to do when people find out? So this is a big story. But if you go further inside, the other bigger story is healthcare costs. What they did was they took a look at high-cost procedures like open-heart surgery, expensive stuff. And they did an experiment. They, when a doctor recommended the surgery, they would take the patient aside, take them in a room, show them a bunch of videos, and give that patient the same level of information about the procedure that the doctor has, the same level of information about the likelihood of benefit, the likelihood of complications, And if they experienced benefit, what the definition of benefit was, and what they find. They found that they got a 67% refusal rate. 67% of patients, if they experience a level of disclosure equal to the level of disclosure information the doctor has, they will actually refuse the therapy. Now, if insurance companies really wanted to remove healthcare costs or cut back healthcare costs, don't you think that they would put in the insurance policy that if your doctor recommends a surgery or if your doctor recommends hospitalization, we want you to dial this 800 number toll-free immediately, and they would FedEx the DVD, the written documents, and they would say to the patient, all we want you to do is read this, sign here. And if you read this and sign here, we will pay you $100 and we will pay 100% of your surgery with no deductible. You decide if you want to have it or not. Well, obviously, it's a winning bet, right? Because 67% of the people are going to say, whoa, I don't want this surgery. And then, of course, the insurance company would reap all these profits. Or would they? Well, it turns out if the hospital did implement such a radical concept, well, what happened? Healthcare costs had dropped 67% the first year. They did this, right? Then the next year, the employer would negotiate a lower rate. They would say, oh, well, our healthcare costs are only 37%. I think we can fire you. We can handle our own claims. We don't even need insurance. We can pay 37%. We're okay with this. So the insurance companies are like, So they're leaving this. They're leaving this alone. They're not going to implement this one little, really earth-shattering piece of results. So you don't even need to bully patients. You don't even need to say to them, "Well, you can't have that care. Well, you've got to call for permission." No. Have them call the toll-free number. FedEx the educational material to them, and let them decide. All I have to do is sign a piece of paper saying they read the material. They get $100 bonus and 100% coverage of their surgery should they decide to have it. So these are solutions that are out there. They've been researched, and the only person who doesn't know how to cut healthcare costs, of course, is the patient. Got about 7 minutes left here, so I'm going to cover another odd fact here. So it turns out, as we mentioned before, 45 million Americans do not have health insurance. And of these 45 million Americans who do not have health insurance, 45,000 die every single year because of untreated disease. Okay. So that's a death rate of 1 in 1,000. There are 2.4 million deaths in America every single year. If all Americans experienced the 1 in 1,000 death rate of the uninsured, there would only be 311,000 deaths every year. So literally, 2.4 million minus 311,000, or literally 2.8 million deaths every year, 2.8 million deaths every year can be attributed to just the fact that a person has health insurance. Now that is stunning. Now, all my basic figures I'm getting from the United States Census Bureau. Now, all it takes is knowing the number of people who don't have insurance, the population of the United States, $311 million individuals, number of people who die every year, 2.4 million. Simple math, fourth grade math, an idle mind and a sharp pencil can really take that, take care of that for you. Now, many of you know I love writing comic strips. I've been writing comic strips. I get tons of comic strips. So I'm going to share with you, I've got 5 minutes left, I'm going to share with you one of my comic strips. Now, these are two doctors who are talking. And most doctors are very sincere, and they're really trying to improve healthcare. So doctor number one says, "I've seen some incredible results with these natural healing methods. I think we need to add some to our protocols." Doctor two says, "If we add them to the medical protocol, they would not benefit patients." Doctor one, "Well, how's that?" Doctor number two, "Well, the basic protocol is give a lethal dose of medication, continue until patient dies, then bill insurance company." Doctor one says, I see what you mean. And so literally, that is the present medical model. Present medical model is we have standards of care in place. We have the standard of care, which has lethal doses of medications, one size fits all, lethal dose. If you give these medications as recommended, a very large number of people will actually die every year. And then once the patient dies, you just submit the bill to the insurance company and you get paid, whether you're a hospital, whether you're a doctor. And if the person doesn't die, if they're just harmed, you still get to submit the bill to the insurance company to get paid. And I'd like to just identify the station here. You are listening to Blake Radio, Rainbow Soul. This is Healing with Dr. Daniels. And please visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out your risk of murder by medicine. And next week I'm going to fix this call-in button so I can recognize all of you calling people and answer your questions. Now, that is the basic, unfortunately, strategy of medical care. And these protocols are written, they're designed this way. And, you know, I've mentioned before that obviously we're talking about homicide here, and we need to institute a policy of homicide investigations parallel to, independent of, any kind of malpractice finding. Because malpractice findings will always exonerate the doctor if he followed the patient, the standard of care. So if the doctor prescribed medications that led to the death of the patient, then the patient is not entitled to any malpractice judgment as long as the doctor followed the standard of care. So the standard of care malpractice, as it's now written, is not anywhere near going to solve this problem at all. It just won't do it. So I'd like to invite people to visit vitalitycapsules.com/find out to find out their risk of murder by medicine. And I'd like to leave you with one last little vignette, actually, from my medical practice. You may know that I practiced medicine for 10 years. I don't practice anymore. There's this patient who worked at a local factory, but she has a very, very high-paying job. She had outstanding, absolutely outstanding insurance. And she suffered from a type of arthritis, rheumatoid. And I was her family practice doctor, but she went to see the surgeon, and she had a rheumatologist. And so the rheumatologist would prescribe these steroids, and the surgeon would do surgery. And he did surgery on her about every, you know, I'd say 18 months at least. Well, finally, he did so much surgery on her that she was debilitated and unable to continue her job, and she lost her insurance. And so each surgery he did, she became worse. And each time he got paid by the insurance. Each time he got paid by the insurance. Well, finally, when she no longer had the insurance that paid a lot of money, he signed her disability papers, which, of course, now she had insurance that didn't pay him a lot of money, and then sent her to the doctor who cared for people that had her new insurance, which was Medicare, I think, at the time, or the disability, Social Security disability insurance. So that's a very small compensation, disability insurance, when you've lost your job in the process. It's really just absolutely a tragedy. So this has been Healing with Dr. Daniels, and oh my God, next week, what do we have on tap for next week? Well, next week, we're going to talk about murderous hospitals. There is one near you. So tune in next week for murderous hospitals. There's one near you, and we are going to have our call-in paraphernalia fixed so that when you call in, I can click on and listen to all of your questions. So please go to vitalitycapsules.com/find out. Actually, leave your questions there, and I'll answer them in between this week and next week's call. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your listening and wishing you great health. This is Dr. Daniel signing off.